The elections are just a week away, and there are several candidates who've been taking up all the precious media airtime, while some very important propositions are silently collecting dust on the ballot. Hello, I'm Tika Ballas, and today on Hometown Alaska, we're going to take a closer look at two propositions on next week's ballot. We've got Bonding Proposition A and Bonding Proposition B. They're all about money and housing and schools and libraries. So many different things, but are they for a good cause? Are they much needed services? Well, we're talking about a lot of money here, and when digits like this hit you at the voting booth, it's probably best to know what you're voting on before you strike yes or no. Today I have guests representing both of these bills here to take your questions and mine. And for the first half of the show, we're going to be discussing Proposition A with Sherry Simmons, the Corporate Communications Officer with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Proposition A is the state-guaranteed veterans residential mortgage bonds. Wow. During the second half of the show, we will take a closer look at Proposition B, the state general obligation library education and educational research facility bonds. This show will be rebroadcast tonight at 7 p.m., and it can also be downloaded off our website at kska.org. Again, this is Hometown Alaska, and today we're discussing Propositions A and B, two state bond propositions. If you would like to join this conversation, perhaps you have questions about Prop A, my guest can hopefully answer them for you. Please call in at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or you can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. And here in the studio with us today to discuss Proposition A is Sherry Simmons. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Tika.
And Proposition A is the state-guaranteed veterans residential mortgage bonds. It's $600 million. I had to double-check those zeros when I first read it. And that's a lot of money. But $600 million is a guarantee of the principal and interest on revenue bonds of no more than $600 million. Is that correct?
That's right.
And you are with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, so you're not going to support a no on Proposition A, but neither can you say vote yes, correct?
That's correct.
So without taking a position, tell us a little bit more about what this proposition entails.
Sure. Alaska Housing has had a veterans mortgage program since 1983, and we're able to give a discount to veterans in order to give them a little bit of a benefit. So in order to issue those bonds, we have to have the guarantee of the state, and to do that, we have to have a vote of the veterans, of the voters on a proposition. So that's why it's coming to them.
Well, let's look at it a little more closely than just the overall for the housing first. First, I understand that a veteran has to have applied to the housing corporation, correct?
Well, veterans actually apply just like anyone else to their bank or credit union, a mortgage company, wherever they would apply for a home loan. And we just are kind of behind the scenes and purchase the loan under the veterans mortgage program. So what they're doing is just getting a little bit lower interest rate. We've had that right around about 0.375%, maybe sometimes just an 0.125%, that is a little bit lower than that they would ever be able to get on the regular market.
And you said that this has been around since 1983?
That's right. Congress actually started the program back in 83 and decided that states could offer a tax-exempt program. They could issue bonds that were tax-exempt and be able to get a little lower interest rate for their veterans. When it went into effect, it had the veterans at that time had to be just in the service in the 70s. So over these years, fewer and fewer people could qualify for it. And we went back to Congress and we got them to change that just a couple of years ago, which opened it up to any veteran now who has completed their first term of service.
In their first term of service, and with how long do they have to go ahead and register?
They have 25 years from when they get out of the service. So if they're a lifetime veteran, then they have 25 years from the time that they are actually out of service. But if they just serve, say, 4 years, then they have 25 years from that point that they can apply for the loan.
And there's nothing in there, a stipulation that states that you have to have served in a war during
your time
service?
No, that's right. It's just to have your term of service that you've served.
And is there anything about dishonorable discharges?
There are. You do have to be honorably discharged in order to qualify.
And what about family members? Is there anything that is extended to family members as well?
Well, if there's more than one person applying for the loan, they would each have to also be a veteran. But generally, we are able to do it with just the one applying.
So not necessarily like a co-signing by...
Right.
Okay, a partner. And when you stated that it was started first in 1983 and the interest, what has the interest been like? Has it fluctuated greatly or has it always been as low as like 0.375%?
Well, I think over the years it's probably changed off and on. We recalculate our interest rates at Alaska Housing every day. So we're never quite sure, depending on what we're able to get, what kind of interest rates we get, how those are going to play out. But lately it's been in that 0.375% lower.
Well, on your terms, is that considered low or high?
Well, right now, interest rates are low anyway. They're around 4% for veterans. So it's a terrific time to get a home, just even without this particular program. But it is just still a little bit added benefit. Going back to when the program went into effect, when Congress started it, AHFC was one of the first states to actually take advantage of this and start the program because we had so many veterans here. So a few years later, Congress decided that they were going to discontinue the program and they grandfathered in the states that were already doing it. So we're one of only 5 states in the nation that's able to offer this particular program.
And that means it's fully tax exempt.
That is, it's tax exempt to the purchases of the bonds themselves. So it doesn't really affect the home buyer or any of Alaskans. It's not something that they're going to be paying out of their pockets. Having to tax their anything that they would be paying. But it's just when the bonds are sold, they're tax exempt and. Congress is the one that put that into place. So that's why the bonds have a little bit lower interest rate.
If you're just tuning in, this is Hometown Alaska. And for the first half of this program, we are discussing Proposition A on next week's ballot, the Veterans Housing Loans Bond, or Loan Bonds. If you have a question for my guest, Sherry Simmons, or you'd like to weigh in, please give us a call at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. Now, as we're looking at this, the $600 million, I think this is a number that a lot of people will grapple with.
Sure.
As they consider this. It is bond, so it's not necessarily giving directly $600 million, right?
That's a guarantee. That's right. It's a guarantee. And what it is actually giving us the authorization to issue those bonds. And we only are able to issue up to $100 million per year if we actually use that amount. So it's giving us really the authorization to serve that many Alaskan veterans that might be able to use the loan program during that period of time. It will last us then a minimum of 6 years and possibly longer if we don't use that $100 million each year.
Now, in 2002, this was a very popular vote yes on this proposition. In 2002, it was for $500 million in bonds. Now, was all of that used since 2002?
It was. And in fact, because of that change that I mentioned earlier, we started making more loans. That if we hadn't been able to get Congress to make that change, we might have just had a continuing decrease in the number of loans that we were able to do. And that amount of that $500 million might have lasted us a number of years in the future. But because of that change just a couple of years ago, we've started making more and more loans to veterans. And it's something now that we're almost to that point where we're using up that money, and probably by next year that will all be gone if we're not able to approve this bond.
And is that why there's an additional $100 million?
I'm sorry.
Understand. This one is a $600 million as opposed to the $500.
I think we looked at, yes, because it was more people that we were able to serve now than what we were able to serve in the past. And so we wanted to make sure that we had enough money to last us a few more years before we'd have to come back to the voters again.
Now, explain also for voters, there's an additional here on, money that's been authorized, a $14.5 million and a $3.5 million. And they're for two other things aside from just housing, correct?
Well, actually, that's a mistake that was in the voter's pamphlet. That was part of the original bill that was passed by the legislature for HFC to purchase the building that they've been in for a number of years now, and to purchase another building that could be used for our public housing offices. And it was a mistake that it was actually included in the voter's pamphlet that is part of this bond proposition. The only thing that the legislature approved to go on the bond proposition was just that the veterans bonds, the $600 million.
Okay, so for all of those tuning in right now, you are listening to Hometown Alaska. And yes, Sherry Simmons just said it. There was a mistake on the voter pamphlet. So please cross that off of your mind. We have Ron here in Anchorage. Good afternoon, Ron. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Hey, just a quick question. I'm just trying to determine what the difference is for just to go through the VA to get a home guarantee loan.
Sure.
And then to go through Alaska Housing. Is the difference only the eighth of a point, or is there any other benefit for the veteran to do that?
Well, that's a good question. The VA portion of it is something that the Veterans Administration offers a 100% financing and guarantee. So you're able to combine that with that Veterans Mortgage Program that AHFC offers. So not only can you get a little bit lower interest rate, but you can get that 100% financing.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the work you guys are doing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. And good afternoon, Jeff.
I called to find out if there is any way an ordinary Alaskan citizen can buy these bonds, or if it has to be done through a broker and pay them a commission. Since it's an Alaskan company and an Alaskan resident, is there some way that a private party individual can buy some of these bonds? And if not, why not?
Okay, that's a good point. And what we do is open up our bonds for a couple of days just to Alaskans to be able to buy them. Since HFC doesn't have any way to issue those directly, they do have to have someone purchase them directly from us. It is through a broker, so you would contact someone like that. But we did do that several years ago, started a program where we could give a little bit extra time and have Alaskans buy some of those bonds.
Yeah, the interest rates tend to be higher than certificates of deposit rates.
That's good. So,
and so that that's what I'm looking at. Mm-hmm. You know, savings.
Okay.
How long are the bonds for?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that right offhand. I think it depends. I don't know the answer.
Okay. Is there a way to get on the mailing list, or is it a matter of watching the website?
You can watch the website, or I think if you do have a broker in town, contact them and have them put you on that list to get notified.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. And I'm glad that you said that was a good question, because that was my next one. In fact, for listeners just tuning in, this is Hometown Alaska, and they just mentioned her website, the website for the Alaska Corporation Housing Corporation. That is on our website as well at kska.org, just under Hometown Alaska. You'll find it there. We are discussing Proposition A on next week's ballot for the first half of this show. And if you have any questions for my guests or you would like to weigh in, please give us a call at 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. Sherry, another question I have as well is, I don't even know how to word this really, but of non-housing corporation money was used in this last go-around with the $500 million.
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
It's a guarantee, correct? So it's a guaranteed cover.
No, this is actually the guarantee that we were talking about was a previous caller asked about the VA guarantee. But this particular one, this money is all going to loans. So it is the Veterans Mortgage Program, and the veterans who qualify for it, then we use this money to purchase their home, their mortgage, and they would pay it back. So one of the things we haven't talked about is that it has a very low delinquency rate. We have a pretty good delinquency rate in Alaska anyway, compared to the United States, actually about half of what the overall is across the United States. And our veterans mortgage program is about a third of that. So it's under 2% delinquency, which is excellent for any kind of a loan program.
And I read someplace that the delinquency rate was incredibly low for this program. It was like 1.7,
I think. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
2.7. Very, very low. We have here also Tina on the line. Good afternoon, Tina.
I'm sorry I was on hold, so I probably missed the answer to my question, which was if it's 100% financed, how does that not continue to spiral the economy into opportunities of repeats of 2008? Where people were over-financed and under-invested themselves into their own home loan.
Sure. One of the things that happened in that particular era was that the price of the houses had gone up so much. And then when people started losing their jobs and when people started realizing that they didn't really qualify in the first place, that the information that they'd turned in, they really weren't making the kind of money that they needed to make their payments. That's not happening here. We have very stringent requirements for getting a loan under this program and any of AHFC's programs. And so that's why we've been able to keep such a low delinquency rate and why people are able to continue making their mortgage payments.
Okay. And could you tell me again what the delinquency rate was? I was not able to hear on the air at that point.
I do believe I read that it was 1.28.
It is 1.28, yes.
Oh, that's very low. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tina.
Bye-bye.
Good afternoon, Janet. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi, Janet. Welcome to the show this afternoon.
Hi. I'm calling. I have quite a few clients who are veterans, and they're having trouble getting housing because of their credit scores. Does Alaska Housing use credit scores to obtain loans for veterans?
We do. One of the things that is the criteria for getting a veterans mortgage program or any of AHFC's loans is to have a steady income and to have credit worthiness. And part of that is to have a credit score that is high enough to make sure that the client is willing and able to make the payments back.
Do you know what that score limit is, that cutoff?
I believe that it's 650. I'm not
okay.
Positive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. We do have an email here as well that inquires about the National Guard and Alaska Territory Guard and their accessibility to this.
Yes, it was put into place by Congress, there were quite a few different groups that qualified for it, including the Army, the Navy, the Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, and it also was included the the Air Force, Coast Guard, and Naval Academies, and the Public Service, Public Health Service. So there were a number of different groups that Congress included in that.
Great. And you have been listening to Hometown Alaska. We've been speaking with Sherry Simmons from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation about Proposition A. Also to be noted, duly noted, it should be stricken from the record, whatever you might have read in your voter's guide, the additional monies that are stated there are not actually there. And in the next half hour of the show, we will be speaking with Josh Appleby and Steve Nerland about Proposition B after this break.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. A copy of Hometown Alaska will be available this afternoon on our website at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to the second half of today's program. We have with us this afternoon Steve Nerland and Josh Appleby with the Yes on B campaign. Now, Proposition B, the State General Obligation Library Education and Educational Research Facility Bonds is stated here at $397,200,000. Now, that is a lot of money as well. On the ballot, this proposition is only about one sentence and three lines long, but there is a whole lot more going on in this particular proposition, and it's all bundled into one. And before we get started here, I'll just rattle off a bunch of the things that are here for our listeners. There's an $88 million to UAF, University of Alaska Fairbanks, for the life sciences classroom and lab facility, $60 million to the University of Alaska Anchorage, their sports center. There's $23.5 million to the University of Alaska in Mat-Su for their Valley Center of Arts and Learning. There's $5 million to the University of Alaska Prince William Sound Community College. $30.5 million to Kenai Peninsula. $20 million to the Near Island. It's a long list of things. It's a lot of money, but it goes out to a lot of different campuses, including it would go to Juneau for the State Library Archives and Museum Facility Relocation. Now, this all sounds like a whole lot of people's to-do list bunched up into one thing. So why don't we start with you, Josh? Why don't you explain to us why all these things are bundled up into this one, and it's not just things that went through the legislature?
Well, first of all, thanks for having us. Really appreciate the time here on the radio. These are all items that were approved by the legislature. In fact, this bond package was voted unanimously 60-0. And signed by the governor. So it did go through the legislative process. The projects that you see on this list are education-related facilities. It's an education infrastructure bond. I mean, we're talking about rural schools. We talk about the University of Alaska, not only in Fairbanks, but in the Mat-Su and the Kenai. We have these projects because I think the legislature really wanted to know that and give the voters of Alaska a chance to show that they support this sort of infrastructure and these sort of projects statewide.
And as I understand, too, that this isn't just for the more urban regions of Alaska, too. There is some money appropriated for the more rural areas like the Yukon and Kuskokwim areas, correct?
That's correct. There are three rural schools that are up for renovation or replacement. These are the top three schools from the Department of Education's list. They're all over 200% capacity. They've been in service for quite some time. In fact, one school is almost at 300% capacity right now, and that's the school out in Kipnuk. But in addition to that, you have projects in Sitka. You have, not just the lower Kuskokwim area. You know, certainly Juneau and, of course, the Kenai. These sort of areas that in Kodiak, and these areas that may not have the population but still have the need.
Mm. If you're just tuning in, this is Hometown Alaska, and we are currently discussing in the second half of this program Proposition B that will be on next week's ballot. And this has a lot to do with campuses around the state, schools, libraries. It's a lot of money, and it deserves a lot of discussion and discourse on it. If you have questions for either of my guests or you'd like to weigh in, please give us a call at 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or you can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. I'd like to mention that there is no organized opposition to either of the propositions that we are discussing today. And that doesn't mean that there isn't somebody who's opposed to it. There's always somebody who says no to anything. So as to not make this program just a pitch for both of these propositions, I'd encourage listeners who are choosing to vote against either of the bonds to call in and share with us why today. In the meantime, we will continue to discuss what is on this so that we can understand it a little more in detail, because it is a lot of different projects again. There are two projects here in Anchorage that get a lot of talk, and we'll go straight to those first since we don't have hours and hours to spend on this. But one of them is the UAF, the new science building. Now, Josh, can you tell us why is there such a need for a new science building at the University of Alaska Fairbanks when we've just built one not too long ago here at the University in Anchorage?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the success that they've had up in Fairbanks in terms of getting the research, not just the education side of it, but the research side of it, and specifically the Arctic research. The life sciences building up there has been the number one priority of the Board of Regents for several years now, because it's a need that has been building year after year. Currently, they're housing faculty and some of the student teachers in ATCO units just inside of the building, much like here in Anchorage, we build up these little temporary classrooms for some of our local schools. They're doing the same sort of thing because they have grown beyond their older buildings up in Fairbanks, and they really are in need of the additional space. Now, with the additional space, they'll be able to hire additional professors and really get some additional research dollars flowing into the state.
Now, that had been, in fact, one of the problems that I keep on hearing voiced, is that we have a brand new science building here in Anchorage, but there doesn't seem to be enough funding for faculty and maintenance. At least this is what I've heard. I honestly don't know these numbers directly, but I have heard this, and that has been a big concern for some voters, is why vote in yet another science building that we can't afford the faculty for? Do you know how much of this money for UAF has been allocated towards faculty?
I don't. And actually, I've not heard about the problems at UAA that you mentioned. I know that since the science and engineering building has been built, that UAA has been very aggressive in getting that thing up and running to its fullest capacity. And I think Chancellor Ulmer has been a really good job doing that.
We do have Dorothy here on the line this afternoon. Good afternoon, Dorothy.
Hi. You cited statistics that said that they were 300% over capacity. To me, there's a difference between what was the original number? What was the original capacity? I mean, if it's a 10-room schoolhouse and they now have 30 students, is different than if they had an original student body of 1,000. We now have 3,000 children to house.
I don't have those numbers right in front of me, but these schools were built, I think, in the like 15 years ago. And so they were built to the needs of the community at the time, and the community has grown, and the needs have grown.
Right, but there's still a matter of scale. I mean, finding space for 30 students rather than 300 is a difference.
I agree that it's a difference, but the need for the additional school space is still there.
I think that would be debatable. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would take that as probably a call that's on more on the anti side.
Well, and we've heard this before. There is a concern about the cost of rural schools. And yes, it does cost more to build facilities in rural Alaska. And often the population out there at first blush may say, you know, it's not worth the dollar per student. But in the state, when we created the state, we created a very important line in our Constitution that says the state will provide adequate education to all peoples in the state of Alaska. And so are we building Taj Mahals out there? No. But are we building ATCO units? We're not doing that either. We're building, you know, facilities that are adequate, that are, you know, are energy efficient, and that can serve the needs of that community. And I think that's important to note because we do care about all peoples in the state. We just don't, you know, fund urban schools because they have property tax matches. We fund schools statewide. And these three schools are the three neediest schools in the state right now, according to the Department of Education.
And I can just state for myself, having been out to the bush a lot, that it is extraordinarily expensive just to even get a gallon of water. I can't even imagine how exponentially higher it is just to get things like tractors and cement out there. Now, we can turn just a little away from the UAF and come back to UAA. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you.
And I take it you can probably answer some of these questions, but the athletic facility at UAA, this has been on the table, off the table for several years now. Well, maybe it's always been on the table for some people. But it looks like this is perhaps a way to finally get this to come to fruition, this facility that everybody and students seem to be cheering for quite some time. Can you tell us where this is supposed to be located, this new facility?
Yeah, the site has actually already been determined. It's right next to Providence Hospital. The university received through the legislature $15 million about 3 years ago, I believe, two years ago. And so the design has been largely completed. The site has been selected next to Providence, and it's a great site, very close to the dorms. Students will have closer access to the facilities. It is called a community arena because it not only will serve the students at the University of Alaska Anchorage, but the whole community. Currently, 80 different groups use the Wells Fargo arena for activities from Taekwondo to basketball to different types of events. And so it will serve a larger group. The students will have a terrific benefit in being able to have workout facilities and recreational facilities that are appropriate for a university campus of 15,000 students.
And when you talk about serving the whole community, will it still work the same way that it currently does at the Wells Fargo complex, that groups have to have been organized by a certain time, or?
Right. They'll have to follow the normal protocol and, you know, priority, obviously, to university students and groups. But it's also a way for the facility to help pay for itself. And that's a big factor that people want to consider, is operational costs of facilities that are added. And, of course, the athletic department, as well as the recreation and student intramurals, those costs help cover part of it, but the availability to the public and the public's willingness, we anticipate to want to rent those spaces, helps cover the costs.
And there has been some concern about whether this will help rectify some of the former Title IX complaints that have been set against UAA several years ago. And will this seems like a substantial amount less money that was first requested to build this arena. Will this now still help satiate that need of, like, lockers for both boys and girls, men and women, equal pay to equal sports?
I know that was a definite consideration in the overall size of the arena, is to be sure UAA continues to track in terms of its Title IX compliance. And when the original Wells Fargo was built in 1978, UAA had 3 sports. Today it has 11 sports. The new arena, community arena, will serve 10 of those 11 sports. There will not be a hockey facility in there, but I know that the athletic department is actually working with the municipality right now regarding a projected improvements down the road in the Sullivan Arena to serve the hockey team. The hockey team itself will be able to work out and use those facilities in the new arena as well. But that's the emphasis of the arena will be basketball, volleyball, and events. What a great idea. How about having graduation on campus? This has been a number of us measuring stick for how large the arena should be. We need to have graduation on the UAA campus. And, oh, by the way, why wouldn't UAA want to host every high school graduation in Anchorage on campus? What a great opportunity to show off the campus to graduating high school students and their family and friends. So that's sort of a measuring stick for the size. The projected size is about 5,600. That's smaller than the Sullivan Arena, but it will also allow other on-campus events now that are I know there's a number of events that have been held at Wendy Williamson that are sold out and no longer able to take people beyond their capacity. This is another venue for that, for speakers, for concerts. So it is not just for sports. It's a community arena. Yes, the teams will play there, but there's going to be a lot more access on campus as well as from community groups.
Now, if you're just tuning in, this is Hometown Alaska, and today we're discussing Proposition B on next week's ballot. And at this very moment, we're discussing the $60 million of Proposition B that is to be allocated to the University of Alaska Anchorage for their new sports center. A big question that comes up a lot for a lot of different people is the location of this place. For those of you listening who'd like to weigh in on this particular topic, you can call us at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or you can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. The location of this is the part that I've read the most about, that people seem to have a qualm. And that would be because it's right there on an area where there are some trails, where students utilize to get from their dorms to campus, and it's right there next to a hospital. Mm-hmm. What is to become of those routes that students tend to take to get to school?
Well, I think it'll be an improvement because they'll, one, it'll be not dark, it'll be lighted. But I think the plan that's been put together is an excellent plan because it's closer to the dorms, and the design includes the ability for students to transit through the building even when an event is going on and be able to use that as a corridor to get to Providence Drive. And then I know that I sat as a volunteer with a large group of people about the design and the location of this. There's a plan in the future beyond this to perhaps connect it up to the library, to the spine, and then so you could transit from the arena into the across Providence into the library with a sky bridge and then down to Rasmussen Hall. You know, what a great concept, Winter University being able to transit indoors, and that makes a lot of sense. The other thing, access to the dorms or proximity to the dorms is important, but parking is also important. UA has already reached an agreement with Providence for shared parking in the Providence garage because Providence use of the parking basically is sort of a daytime use. The UAA's capacity for the community arena will be in the evening when Providence doesn't have as much use. So they've already reached an agreement regarding parking. There already has been approved by the municipality a transit plan for it as well as a traffic plan. The main entry would be off of Elmore. I think there'd be a roundabout in there in the design, so it's not going to jam up any more traffic that's already on Elmore at different times. It'll move smoothly. So a lot of the work has been done. This has been presented to the community councils in the area. I think anytime you take an area that has some trees on it, you know, there will be people concerned about, you know, what it's going to do for the community. But I think the design, there's still going to be trees there, but it's going to be a lot more safe transit for students too, from the dorms into the arena.
And during those community meetings, I was privy to one of them years ago. Yes, there's always somebody who's very concerned about taking out some of our precious parklands here in the city. There is some concern I noticed when they finally came to an agreement for this Elmore area was traffic for emergency systems getting to the hospital, and a concern about that. Are there any plans to widen Providence at all, or?
You know, I don't know about that. I know that East 40th, which is the area between Providence and this site, is actually being reworked right now by Providence itself. I'm guessing in anticipation of this, we hope. I know that the municipality, the traffic department, was brought into these discussions by the planners of UAA because it does present specific challenges at peak times. But I think that also the other good possibility that's a part of this, it's really not a possibility, is there going to be additional parking created for sort of daytime parking, because most of the events in this likely are going to be in the evening. There'll be some weekend daytime events, but the additional parking will offer some additional benefit, but we're not going to have acres and acres of additional parking that takes up valuable space on campus for future development on that site as well. I know that there's discussion in the future about having an athletic field, perhaps an artificial athletic field for soccer, recreational type of things that would be great for students close to the dorm. So I think they've done an excellent job in the plan for this.
And has it been taken into consideration as well? Do you know about the routing to ANMC, the Alaska Native Medical Center over there, or?
I'm sure that the transit plan that's been approved, because it's approved by the municipality, they take into consideration all of those issues regarding our hospital community in that area.
Again, if you're just tuning in, this is Hometown Alaska, and we have been discussing Proposition B on next week's ballot. And if you'd like to pose a question for one of my guests or weigh in your opinion, please give us a call at 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. Josh, big question. There's a lot of different things on this. Why not just pay cash?
That's an excellent question, as a matter of fact. And really the answer to that is there's a couple different answers to that, but the one that I think resonates most is, what else can we do with the money in the bank? You know, money in the bank earns interest. We have a very large bank account, and our most productive one that we like to use for this example, and that's the permanent fund. Permanent fund has a 26-year average of earning 8.7% interest. The interest rate on the bonds, when they were put before the legislature, were estimated at 4.2%. That's basically double. So if we left the money in the bank, we would earn a lot more interest. And I did a calculation. If you took $400 million and you had it in the bank at simple interest of 8.2 over 20 years, you would earn almost $700 million.
Wow.
Over that, I mean, just it's that long amount of time. And so the interest rate on the bonds, it calculated out to be about 336. So if you add it to the original principal, you're talking about, you know, just under 700 million total payments over 20 years. So by not using cash today with the bond interest rates as low as they are, and they rounded up high for the 4.2. I'm sure HFC will tell you that interest rates are, they seem to just never have a bottom. But it's never cheaper to bond right now. We have an excellent bond rating in the state. We have a very low interest rate that we can get. And so if you compare that to what you can earn in the state savings account, it really makes much more sense to bond over 20 years for infrastructure like this than to pay cash.
Now, with a bond, pardon me if this is common information, but with a bond, I mean, can that interest rate fluctuate, though?
It's a locked-in interest rate.
It is a locked-in, completely locked-in.
Yeah.
So buy in now.
We sell the bonds, and the bonds have a rate of return that's fixed over the length of the bonds.
Great.
Now, even if you don't like our pie-in-the-sky numbers, which some people don't, the general fund and the Constitutional Budget Reserve both have interest rate returns around 3.9 to 4.2. So even if we just left it in the general fund and didn't, say, put it in the permanent fund, then we would earn the same amount of interest having it in the bank than, you know, to put out the bonds. So it would be a wash either way.
The other part of the equation really is the economy, and that's kind of our yes on B is youth, economy, and schools. And the economy is a big part of this. I think all of us are concerned about the oil industry and continued development that helps fund things in our state. Everybody's concerned about what kind of gas line we're going to get for jobs. Well, here's an opportunity right away to be able to affect over 6,000 jobs for basically a three-year period. And the state of Alaska in its history, and in Anchorage in particular, has had opportunities over the years where you've had a little downturn in the economy, and it's been improved by projects, Project 80s. I'm that age and vintage. I was around during Project 80s, and it helped drive the economy. And as a small business person myself, I'm looking to Proposition B as creating jobs all around the state at a time when we need those jobs and we need people continuing to earn a good income. So that's another factor in this. We control that. We don't necessarily have to depend on anyone else. The state of Alaska, by choosing to support this, can go out and build these needed facilities. 20-year bonds are the length of these bonds. And most of these facilities certainly are built today to be 20 to 30-year facilities at a minimum. So you would have the facilities built, you would create these jobs, and it also helps support education.
We do have an email here that sort of falls into that jobs, but it asks, how does the 2010 census affect the decisions made in this proposition? If the census has not been released yet, why are we making the decision now? That also plays into jobs and schools as we look at the numbers of kids that are leaving the bush in certain parts of the bush. And it is a good question, I think. Why is this decision being made now when, in fact, we don't have the numbers yet?
Well, actually, I disagree that we do have the numbers. The census isn't only an every 10-year thing. The Census Bureau takes updates every couple years. So we have a good idea of where the population growths are in the state. And so it's not a decision that's made blindly. We have that data. We don't have the official numbers, which you get every 10 years, but they do updates and they keep track of those sort of things between the 10-year marks. And so they've made these decisions with the best information that they have, and that would be, you know, from 2008, which really isn't that long ago.
No.
To add on to what Steve was saying, there's an article in today's paper. It says, stable Anchorage dodges the worst of the housing bubble. And really, capital project spending, whether it be, you know, cash from the capital budget or bond propositions such as this, really is what helps the Alaska economy bridge the gap between these major hits that the lower 48 sees. We're able, with our economy, to keep the housing market stable. I mean, if our economy went south, our housing market would go south. We all remember what happened in the 80s. And projects like this, bond projects like this that provide the jobs, keep the economy stable.
Do you have numbers on how many jobs are projected to be brought out of each one of these projects? Or
we've calculated that the overall statewide, it'll be over 6,000 jobs if all these projects are completed.
Now, are these projects still open for bids to contractors? Or
These projects are mostly in the planning stages. As Steve said, the planning for the arena has been done. But the actual construction, I mean, we don't have the money yet, so we haven't been able to, lock anybody in.
And yes, I just was noticing that on your pamphlet here, it also says that there'll be no increase of property taxes for this.
Well, we put that in there because there's confusion sometimes between our school bonds in Anchorage and our municipality bonds, where we go out to bond and property taxes are affected. Well, there's no property tax effect with this at all. It has no effect on anyone. And so we wanted to just sort of clear that up, because when you say bonds to many people in Anchorage in particular, or places that have property tax, they think their property tax is going to be affected. There is no effect on property tax. And the other comment that I would make is, you know, Alaska is different than other places. When you have capital projects in other places, just pick a state, pick a North Dakota, similar population. The money that they use for capital projects was generated from some kind of tax, either an income tax or a sales tax or some other kind of tax. In the state of Alaska, the oil industry basically creates these dollars. And so those dollars are available in the permanent fund, in the constitutional budget reserve. And in the state of Alaska, that means that projects like this, even if we bond for them, there is no property tax effect. The taxes have already been paid by the oil industry to Alaska. So it's when people say, well, you're taking our money. Well, this money only came from the oil industry. It didn't come from an income tax, a state tax, a property tax, or any other tax. It just came from the tax on the oil industry.
If you're just tuning in, this is Hometown Alaska, and we have been discussing for this last half of the hour Proposition B on next week's election. If you have any questions for my guests, either Steve Nerland or Josh Appleby from the Yes on B campaign, please give us a call at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or you can email us at hometownalaska@ksKA.org. Now, we've only got about 10 more minutes in this hour, and there are a lot of things on here besides just the UAF and UAA campus. And maybe you can explain in a little more detail what some of these things are. Like, for instance, something here that doesn't really touch on the education or the campus side at all, but is the money being allocated to Juneau for their relocation facilities. Josh, can you explain to us a little bit what that is?
Absolutely. It's a fantastic project down in Juneau. It's the State Library Archive and Museum Facility. I don't know if you've kept up with what's happening with our current archive. The roof is just absolutely gone. They've had some catastrophic leaks that have come through, and it's been a project that has been talked about for several years because their facilities are just not adequate as for a state archive. And the state library is very educational. I know that going to school in Lathrop up in Fairbanks and even at UAF, interlibrary loan was a very big thing. This is kind of before the internet so much. But we were able to get archived periodicals and such things from the state library because they were all held in Juneau, and they would just ship them up to Fairbanks for our use. And it was very very effective way of getting that information without having 15 copies across the state. But it's an excellent facility down in Juneau, and it's an important facility, not just for the museum, but really the historical artifacts of what it was in the building of Alaska and where we've been for the last 100 years.
So what you're saying, in a sense, is that this ties in because it is, in a sense, still an aspect of education.
Absolutely.
In fact, the way that that Bond's propositions are, they have to be a related type of entity. You've seen in the past general obligation bonds that are like road bonds or transportation bonds. There have been in the past, I think 2002, there was an education bond. So it all has to be related. They can't just have education and a bridge and a road and an airport all in one bond. It has to be related under, I believe, the designs of the bonds in the Constitution.
Let's go to the phones really quick. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Good afternoon. I don't know if this is a question of semantics or what. The gentleman said that the oil companies pay all the money, but it won't affect our taxes. But what the oil companies pay isn't tax. I don't know what the oil companies are paying to the state. We're sure getting a lot of it.
Well, income to the state is made up of several things, and it's an excellent question because it can get kind of complicated in the semantics. Oil companies pay property taxes. They pay corporate taxes, but we also get royalties from the oil as well,
right,
as taxation on the transportation of the oil.
I mean, the oil companies are holding us up. I personally moved here before oil. I would like to go back to paying income tax, which went up 385% when I moved here from California.
Well, maybe that'll be on next year's ballot. Thank you, Mary.
I was so impressed by this state and the education system when I moved up here. You can't imagine. I would cheerfully pay more tax.
Great. I don't know if that's the most popular thing for voters this year, but it's good to know that you've weighed in.
The children need it more than we do.
Well,
our education system is, we used to have the highest paid teachers in the country. We don't anymore. You can't attract the best unless you pay them well.
Great. Thank you, Mary. And speaking of the children, talk to our listeners just a little bit again, Josh, about where exactly these schools out in the bush are going to be.
Well, a lot of them are in the Lower Yukon Kuskokwim School District, or in kind of that area. You just want me to say this one, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Is really what you want.
I do.
we have schools in Kipnuk, Alakanuk, and Quingilinoc.
That was pretty good.
So
it's close.
It's very close. These are the top three schools with the Department of Education based on need as determined by the department.
And I think that's a real important factor because, people have said, you could just pick out schools from anywhere. Well, the Department of Education, their responsibility is to identify those schools that are in the most need. And there's a long list, by the way, in rural Alaska. So these are the top three. That was what was picked by our legislatures to be on this bond. So I have a lot of confidence being out there representing Prop B that these are a priority of our state legislature and of the Department of Education. So we can support them in that regard.
And, well, okay, there are only three, and I know for a fact there are definitely schools out there who wish they had made that top three list. But there is money, instead of going to more of those schools, there's money here to go to the Kenai Peninsula College.
That's a great thing for the Kenai Peninsula. KPC, part of the UAA system, is going to have an opportunity to have a technical education center, and really importantly to, I think, the people in Kenai, is a housing complex. It'll be a small dorm complex that will start, and In particular, I'm really excited about that because I know that people in the Kenai have wanted that opportunity as a part of the Kenai Peninsula College as part of UAA. And so this will get that going and starting, and it will be an opportunity. There may be some rural students out there, for example, that may not want to come to Anchorage or Fairbanks, maybe too large a town. Well, the Kenai, Soldotna area might be just the right place, and with the curriculum that they're going to be offered, might be something that they might be interested in. So that's a big thing, and I think we're looking for very active support in Kenai because of that.
And there's also for Kenai, the Technical Education Center. What exactly is a Technical Education Center?
Well, Josh, in terms of technical education, I mean, we are moving into an age where the ability to have skills when it comes to technology, skills when it comes to, you know, those machines that we depend on, whether we see them or not, for our everyday life is absolutely critical. And having an area in Kenai and having the facilities to train the students and to give them the education they need to, move forward and to, you know, give us that sort of quality of life, whether it be computers or, you know, just other types of electronics that run our lives every day, is going to be critical.
Really fast, we do have an email here, too, that looks at kind of what we just discussed a minute ago, but asks if there are any recurring operating and maintenance costs associated with Proposition B.
Well, absolutely. Anytime you build a new building, there will be reoccurring operating maintenance costs. Certainly, with the rural schools, they'll be replacing current facilities, and they'll be certainly brought up to energy efficient standards that these buildings most certainly aren't right now. And some of the new facilities, whether it be the university facilities, you know, what we talked about, user groups and the university's ability to, offset the additional costs with user group funds, charging them to use a facility. Up at UAF, specifically in the Life Sciences Center, what's so important about federal research dollars is that they take a percentage of that right off the top to pay for the additional operation and maintenance costs. And so we really have ways to pay for those additional costs once these buildings are made up and running.
And how far into the future are they guesstimating this? Or what are the estimations based on? I mean, are they looking at recurring costs over a 5-year? Is any of that set aside within these monies here?
No, these are construction funds. These are not only operation funds.
So the question that came back earlier about the UAF science building, would it also end up having problems putting in a faculty and a maintenance staff? Is that a possibility that they could have that once this money is drafted? Would that take further legislation or bond approvals?
Well, no. Operation funds for the university are paid for out of the general fund. It's a yearly appropriation from the legislature. So if for some reason the university finds that they need some additional funds, they would include that in their annual budget request legislature.
Well, the other way that, you know, the university does have the ability, and, you know, having two students that graduated from UAA, I don't really want to say this, but, you know, the operational costs are also governed by tuition and fees, as well as to community groups to use the facilities, whether they be the arena or other facilities. So the university does have ways of collecting additional monies to help cover those costs.
And I could talk about this for a lot longer, but this hour has come to end. I'd like to thank our guests today for taking the time to break some big numbers down for us. Sherry Simmons with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and Josh Appleby and Steve Nerland with the Yes on B campaign. Don't forget, you can have an opinion, but it's only counted on the ballot. Election Day is November 2nd. Next week, November 3rd, on Hometown Alaska, Charles Wohlforth will be discussing the implications of the midterm elections. Pat Yak is APTI Vice President of News and Public Media. Kristen Speck engineered today's show. Thank you for listening. I'm Tika Ballas.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.